It's the Scotty Myers Show.
Hey, welcome to this week's edition of the show. I am your host, Scotty Myers, back after a one-week hiatus. I didn't feel right releasing an episode on Christmas Eve, even though I had a shit ton of stuff to talk about. It's been hard waiting, because obviously we have yet to discuss the final episode of The Mandalorian, although I feel really confident about talking about it now, not spoiling it for anybody, because it has been a couple of weeks. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into Wonder Woman 84 and a few other geeky things a little bit later on. But hopefully you're having a fantastic holiday season, whatever it is you're celebrating. I will say mine was really laid back. My wife and I, we decided not to do gifts this year. It just was a thing. We were like, nah, you know. And I was worried that it was a trap. You know, it was one of those things where she's like, I'm not going to get him a gift. And then she got me something. So I was kind of prepared. You know, I had a little something in my back pocket that, you know, ace up the sleeve, as it were, if I needed to play it. Didn't have to play it, though. So it means that's good. It means I get to sit on it for a little while. You know, she's got a birthday coming in March, Valentine's Day. There's lots of times to pull that card out, but I was ready, because I was not going to be Admiral Ackbar'd on this thing. I was, you know, it's a trap. No, I was ready. And luckily, yeah, it didn't play out as a trap. But it was just one of those things. We both kind of looked at each other and were just like, you know, there's nothing we need. And not to, you know, continue the shittiness that is 2020, or continue to perpetuate the shittiness that is 2020. But it's just been such a year that it's like, you know, what am I going to get? What's going to culminate the year? What's going to, you know, be better and make the year so much better? And it was just, there was nothing for us this year. So that was that. So it was kind of a low-key holiday season. We did, if you were listening a few weeks ago, talking about the experience coupons for the nephews, we did do that. I had to fly all of them around. That was one of them, was a flight from Scott, because I can pick them up and make them fly like Superman. So I had to do that. On Christmas Day. It was kind of like my Christmas Day workout. But they haven't cashed in any other ones yet. And I think my plan is going to come to fruition, that they're going to forget about them. And we're going to kind of skate. Which I know sounds terrible, but hey, it's, you know, it is what it is. But I was sitting back and I was going, you know, it's the last show of the year. It's the last show of 2020. And I know everybody is really ready to roll the calendar over and get into the next year. And, you know, it'd be great if we could kind of relive the roaring 20s, right? Like, let's, you know, okay, 2020 sucked, but at some point in 2021, we get to start to party and have some fun again, which would be great. But I was sitting back and I was going, you know, what was my year in review? And, I had to think long and hard, and only one thing stood out to me. You know, obviously, you know, we do the show, and I love doing the show and hearing from you and all that kind of stuff. But like, as far as like a personal highlight, I had one for the year, and that was in January. It's almost been a year, but it was the half marathon in Disney that I got to run in January. That was the highlight of the year. And then, you know, I was spending the last kind of half of this year starting to prep for the next half marathon, and then that got canceled. So that was a little bit of a bummer and things like that, but it was kind of shitty. And then, so sitting there going, okay, so can't talk about personal highlights for the year. What were kind of the yearly highlights? Like, what was the good stuff of 2020? And man, I was struggling to find it. Like, I was like, okay, you know, how about a top 10 movies? I didn't see 10 movies, new movies. In 2020, I think I saw five that stick out to me. So I guess they would have to be my top five, because it's the only five I remember seeing that were new in 2020. That was and in no particular order. Bad Boys for Life, I did enjoy the hell out of it. That or Sonic the Hedgehog was the last movie I saw in theaters that was new. Sonic obviously is on that list. Birds of Prey, which I do love. I love, love, love Birds of Prey. I think it takes unnecessary heat, to be honest. I enjoy the hell out of that movie. Soul, which just came out on Christmas Day. And then Wonder Woman 84, which also came out on Christmas Day. So for a guy that's a movie buff, it was a shitty year, you know, and unless you count The Mandalorian as a movie, which it's better than some movies. So maybe it should count as a movie. I don't know. It's just tough to kind of recap 2020 without just a giant poop emoji. So, you know, I'm kind of like everybody else. Let's turn the page on this bad boy. But I also, I hate being the voice of realism, but, you know, shit doesn't go away on January 1st, right? It's not like 2020 is Cinderella's, chariot, and at the stroke of midnight, it turns back into a pumpkin. It's not like January 1st, all of our problems are cleansed. We're still going to have to deal with the shit for probably at least half of 2021, is my guess. So, you know, I know we're all excited to turn the page, but we got to be a little realistic about it too. Sorry to be a downer, there, but I when people say, oh, I can't wait for this year to be over, well, the shit's still going to be kicking around. We still have a lot of stuff to clean up. So, you know, there's that. Now, when I did think of highlights of 2020's felt like such a long year that I didn't even think this was in 2020, but we've all kind of, I think, forgotten about Tiger King. We were obsessed with Tiger King. That was this year. I was doing a show, Battlecom, which is a bunch of geeks get together and humorously argue over silly questions. And I was writing a joke, and one of them, I was trying to reference things that happened this year. So I had to Google it, and I saw Tiger King, and I was like, holy shit, that felt like it was 5 years ago that I was learning all about Joe Exotic. But that was this year. That was insane. It made me want to go back to the happier times of watching Tiger King. Never thought those would be the happier times. Anyway, I do have an off story to wrap up the year. And then off story is a news story where you see the headline and you just kind of go, oh, for fuck's sakes. Hence offs. Headline, a 42-year-old man won his lawsuit against his parents for throwing out his porno collection. That's the headline. You want to talk about fucking up Christmas. It's always going to be awkward. Thanksgiving, everything from now on between this guy and his parents. So this 42-year-old guy, his name's David Working from Grand Haven, Michigan. He made the news a few years ago when he called the cops on his parents for throwing away his massive porno collection. And apparently what had happened was he had moved back into his parents' house in 2016 after a divorce. The next summer he moved to Indiana and he was expecting his parents to ship him his 12 boxes of porno and adult toys. But then they threw them out instead. And his dad wrote him an email saying, frankly, David, I did you a big favor getting rid of this stuff. Well, obviously David did not see it that way. He called the cops. He actually sued his parents, and to make matters worse, a district court in Michigan just ruled in his favor. He now has until February to decide how much he wants to ask for in damages. His estimated collection apparently was worth about $25,000. I'm starting to figure out why this guy was divorced. His lawyer says some of the things, though, were, quote, irreplaceable. Well, when you get that fleshlight that fits just right, it is kind of irreplaceable, you know. But man, 12 boxes of porno and adult. Has this guy's not heard that porn's on the web? You don't need to have it in a box anymore. You can just type it in and you're good to go. Would have saved this guy a whole lot of problems. I'd be curious to see what he asked for in damages and how much hand lotion he asked for in the settlement as well. Offs. Now, I offs that story, but I will say, I know the pain of having your parents throw out something that you didn't want thrown out. Mine was not a porno collection, but you may remember those old rubber wrestling figures, the old like WWF figures back in the day, like Hogan, Macho Man. They were the worst toys because they were frozen in really bad rubber poses, and the paint would rub off on each one when you wrestled with them. But I had a shit ton of them. I don't want to say I had all of them, but I definitely had a ton of them. And I know I had a limited Hulk Hogan one in white trunks, as opposed to the typical yellow trunk Hogan. I had both. I had yellow trunk Hogan and white trunk Hogan. And I had moved away, and they were in a box at my mom's, and I moved back, and I was like, hey, where are my my wrestling figures? I kind of wanted to look at them, and I was thinking, oh, you know, I might sell them, maybe pull out a couple, like Macho Man, like guys that I really loved, and pull them out, and then get rid of the rest. And mom was like, oh, I gave that away. I gave that to some friend and their kid. And I was just, I was crushed. Crushed. That was ridiculous. And then I found out they go for money, even out of the box. And that sometimes people will pay dollars for those old wrestlers. I was really pissed. I don't think I could sue her about it, but I was pissed off. Let's get into the geek news of the week. It's actually kind of geek news of 2 weeks, really. There hasn't been a lot, obviously, over the holidays, but there's been enough. And we'll start with Wonder Woman 84. It was released on Christmas Day. Watched it right away. Saw people online. Mixed reviews online. It started off certified fresh. It dropped out of certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Some people complaining about certain things about it, which I will get to. My thoughts on the movie, if I sum it up briefly, it's good. The problem is it's not great. The first one was great. And that's where you kind of step back and go, man, that was not what I was expecting. Because, you know, you're expecting sequels to be bigger and badder and crazier. And this one actually, it takes a step back. And in retrospect, as I thought about it, I was like, you know what? I kind of appreciated it. It showed another side of Wonder Woman. The first movie really showed a bit of her compassion, but a lot of her warrior side. Walking across no man's land and stuff like that. Like that scene, the first time I saw it, and it still kind of does tear me up. But the first time I saw it, I was full on damn near bawling. It was just so powerful and so well done. And the thing with Wonder Woman 84 is it's definitely a different tone. The message of this one and the side of Wonder Woman that they're portraying in this movie is the one of hope, and her hope for humanity and what she, you know, thinks humanity can aspire to be to become in her eyes. And that's a big part of the movie. And also the love that she has, not only for Earth and for its people, but obviously for Steve Trevor. So there's a part of this movie which is a romance story. And then, you know, I saw a few complaints online that it was like, well, it's so cheesy 80s. Well, it's called fucking Wonder Woman 84. It takes place in the 80s, and the opening sequence, which takes place in a mall, is very over the top 80s, and they're really getting you to kind of understand the time frame and the excess of the 80s. Everything was larger than life. Every car had to be faster. You know, all the clothes were outlandish. The hair was big. Food portions were huge. Like everything about the 80s was big and excessive. And you really get that in the opening mall sequence with her stopping some criminals. It's over the top. There's no question. And some of the action, especially in that sequence, is very comic booky, like very cartoonish and comic booky. But again, I think it's done on purpose, almost as a way to show, you know, this movie's a little bit more lighthearted than the one that was set in World War One. So it serves a couple of features. It sets our time frame, and it kind of sets the mood for the movie that it's a bit more lighthearted. As it goes, the first hour of the movie, the pacing is slow. It just is. They are spending time developing some characters. Barbara Minerva, Maxwell Lord, our main villains. We get to know them a little bit more. We get to learn a little bit about what Diana's been doing and how she's still, you know, 60, 70 years later, pining over Steve Trevor. But that's the thing. It's the story of this one true love that never leaves your heart. And that is Steve Trevor for Wonder Woman. And you read the comic books, that's the case. So it's one of those things where they establish all that. But it does take pretty much the first hour of the movie. There's not really any action after that mall sequence for the first hour. So, and the pacing is an issue. There's no question. The first hour of the movie does tend to drag. Once we get into kind of the Dreamstone, which is what gives Maxwell Lord the ability to kind of make everybody's dreams come true, it starts to pick up. And we start to see Maxwell Lord's obsession with power and obsession with greatness. And, you know, we start to see Barbara's obsession to become something better and you know, than what she is. She's seen as, you know, forgotten. Like the woman that hires her at the Smithsonian, it doesn't even know her name and doesn't know that she works there. Like, that's kind of how they portray Barbara before she becomes Cheetah. And, you know, I saw a couple people critiquing, and again, I'm getting into some of the critiques a bit in my own, but saw some people going, well, if Wonder Woman loved humanity so much, wouldn't she just wish for peace on Earth when she had the Dreamstone, not for Steve Trevor to come back? You have to think, in the movie at that point, they don't think it's real. You know, at that point, they think it's just folklore, myth. They don't know that the Dreamstone actually works. So, you know, when she's having the conversation with Barbara and they're like, Barbara's like, I don't even know what I would wish for. And Wonder Woman's like, I do. And she happens to be holding the Dreamstone when she says it. Hence why Steve Trevor comes back. It's not like Wonder Woman made a conscious choice of, if I make this wish, everything I say is going to come true. She did it in passing without thinking, which is how a lot of people make their wishes. It's what's in front of you right now, not big picture, but what's in front of you right now. And that kind of plays out later as Maxwell Lord, in his quest for more power and more things and more everything, is granting wishes to whoever and whatever. And in return, he's taking things from them. So people are just like, oh, you know, I wish that person was dead. Okay. Most people have said that at some point in their life, don't really mean it. But if you're talking to someone that can grant a wish, boom, it's done. So that's a kind of a statement of the movie as well. There's a really nice fight sequence between Cheetah and Wonder Woman. I thought Cheetah looked really good. I'm getting towards the end of the movie now, but I thought Cheetah looked good. Some people complained about her online. I don't know. I had no issue with the CGI in it. It was a good fight. It wasn't a great fight, and it wasn't very long. It's probably only, I want to say, under 5 minutes. Probably even less than that, probably like three. I wish that fight had been a bit longer. And then when it comes to Maxwell Lord, Wonder Woman saves the day, but it's not a big climactic battle. And I think that also left people kind of scratching their heads a little bit, because it's Wonder Woman. You know, why is there not a big climactic battle? But really cool things happen in the movie. If you're a fan of Wonder Woman, if you've read the comics, watch it, the old TV show. It's definitely part of this is a love letter to the Linda Carter TV show and the Superman movies kind of the 80s. There's definitely a love letter in there somewhere to those movies and TV shows. But, you know, she kind of has this, maybe a little spoiler here, but she kind of has her invisible jet, kind of. You know, she learns some new powers along the way. I won't say what they are if you're going to watch it and ruin it, but they're all comic book accurate powers. I've seen a few people complaining about that online. It's like, pick up a fucking comic before you complain about what Wonder Woman can and cannot do. It is very comic accurate. I enjoyed the movie. It's long. It's about 2.5 hours. It's 10 minutes or so longer than the first Wonder Woman, but it feels longer, especially because of that first hour pacing issue. I really wish they had, sped up Maxwell Lord's power grab so that we could have had an action sequence somewhere in that first hour to break up the character development and story moving forward. I think that would have helped quite a lot. But overall, I enjoyed the hell out of Wonder Woman 84. I'll watch it again. And yeah, there's a couple moments towards the end of the movie that I was tearing up. You know, it did leave me with a sense of hope and a sense of, you know, feeling good about humanity and the world and, you know, something that you normally don't feel when you leave a superhero movie, right? Normally you come out charged up because of the action. And when this one wrapped up, I just kind of felt warm inside. Very different feeling for the end of a superhero movie. I definitely think it's worth watching. I would give it probably a solid 7.5 to 8 out of 10. Again, the pacing issues hold it back, and I wish there was a couple of longer action sequences in it, but I love what Patty Jenkins has done as a director with Wonder Woman in both films, and I love Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman. She's got it down. She really does. She's got the look, she's got the attitude. Everything about her portrayal of Wonder Woman, in my mind, is kind of spot on. So I definitely think it's worth checking out. If you can, watch it. If you agree with me, don't agree with me, that's cool. Let me know. Speaking of Wonder Woman and Patty Jenkins, so that's my review of Wonder Woman 84. But speaking of our two main people behind the Wonder Woman franchise, Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins, Warner Brothers quickly, after the number of streams and that they got for Wonder Woman 84, quickly announced Wonder Woman 3 is being fast-tracked with both Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins returning. Patty Jenkins has done some talking already about the next Wonder Woman movie, and she said it's going to take place in the present day. So that was also one of my hopes. I didn't want to get a 90s, you know, grunge Wonder Woman movie or like a turn of the century Wonder Woman movie or something like that. I really wanted it to be in the here and now. And she has said that is the case. Hasn't said anything about a villain or anything like that yet. My guess would be Circe. We haven't seen her yet in the movies. It's also someone that could kind of change a few things that happen at the end of Wonder Woman 84 that Patty Jenkins has hinted that may change. So as a villain, it would make sense. It's one of her big bads next to Cheetah and Ares. So my guess is Circe will be the villain for Wonder Woman 3. And I'm glad it's being fast-tracked. I thought Patty Jenkins working on the Star Wars movie Rogue Squadron would really delay Wonder Woman 3, but apparently it's on the quick turnaround trip. Speaking of Rogue Squadron from Patty Jenkins, Chris Pine apparently has read the story. Don't know if that means Chris Pine is going to be joining the Star Wars universe, but he said the story's fantastic. So a little bit of good early buzz for Patty Jenkins' Star Wars movie as well. Speaking of Warner Brothers and DC movies, they are going full steam ahead. This thing is not slowing down as much as maybe some people online would like to see DC slow down with their movies. It's not happening. They have announced that starting in 2022, they are looking at 4 theatrical releases a year. And on top of that, at least 2 HBO Max films a year, all set in the DC world. So they're saying, you know, we're going to do our big heroes for theatrical releases. So like Aquaman, Shazam, Wonder Woman, you know, Black Adam obviously is going to go to theaters. Batman, obviously. Those big heroes are going to go to theaters. And then maybe some kind of smaller heroes will go to HBO Max. So some of the ones that were bandied about were maybe like Static Shock or Batgirl. Now, in my mind, Static Shock should go to theaters. Batgirl, either way, I like Batgirl, but I could see the case being made for theatrical or HBO Max, either way. My hope is that means we get some of the really odd characters in the DC universe to get their own kick at the can, maybe on these HBO Max shows, like Booster Gold. I'm a huge Booster Gold fan. I don't know that you put out a Booster Gold movie theatrically, but if you're going to put one on HBO Max, it might make sense. Plastic Man could work there. Animal Man. Secret Six could work. There's a lot of great characters that are not household names that could find homes on HBO Max and then work their way into the larger DC cinematic world. So I like this plan from Warner Brothers and DC Films. Just hopefully they keep the quality up. That's the key. I mean, that's 6 movies a year. That's a shit ton. Moving over to Marvel, not a whole lot of Marvel news right now. They kind of gave us everything at that Disney investors conference. But one rumor that kind of was flying around out there was that Joseph Gordon-Levitt was rumored to have met with Marvel. Who knows what the role could be? Obviously, the internet's kind of been guessing. I've got a few thoughts of my own. Maybe Reed Richards. You know, they are going to do a Fantastic Four movie. And that, or maybe Johnny Storm. Maybe they go the other way for Joseph Gordon-Levitt there. Maybe he's not involved with that at all. Maybe he's Nova. I could see him being Nova. Might fit that character quite well. I'd actually like to see him almost as a villain, maybe. You know, like off the top of my head, not sure which villain I'd like to see him play, but it'd be kind of different to see Joseph Gordon-Levitt as a villainous character as opposed to a hero. But interesting that he's having a meeting with them, and be curious to see where that goes. On to Star Wars news, and before we get in to the final episode of The Mandalorian, which was fucking nuts, we know now that there's another show coming that they held back at the investors panel from Disney, and that's The Book of Boba Fett, and it is coming December of next year, and it is not season 3 of The Mandalorian. They made that distinction. Season 3 of The Mandalorian is something else. The Book of Boba Fett is its own show, which, as a Boba Fett fan, makes me so fucking happy. Like, and watching his arc from Empire, when we first get to meet him, if you don't count the holiday special, you know, and then into Jedi, and then him popping up in The Mandalorian, and his actions throughout the season of The Mandalorian, and then his actions at the end of The Mandalorian, which I will get to in a second. It makes me think that maybe he is set up to be the anti-hero that the Star Wars universe needs. You know, I talked a lot in a review of a Mandalorian episode about the gray area of the universe, that so much of Star Wars is set up in the light side, dark side. Very black and white, right? It's either good or it's bad. We don't really have a lot of anti-heroes in Star Wars. You could say Solo maybe was during the original trilogy, but how often did he really do anything bad? Maybe when he shot first, right? That pretty much about it. He's a scoundrel, but he wasn't necessarily a bad guy. You know, so that might be the closest we have. Maybe Maul in some of the, you know, Star Wars Rebels, Clone Wars stuff. He kind of maybe did a few things that were helpful to kind of the good guys, quote unquote, but was really always bad. And I love Darth Maul. But Boba Fett, he can just walk the line between both. If you look at his actions in Empire, obviously, you know, getting Han frozen in carbonite and taking him back to Jabba and getting payment for that and whatnot, very evil, right? We hated Boba Fett. Well, I didn't hate him, but most people hated Boba Fett. Then we watch him in The Mandalorian, and he's helping rescue the child. He's there to help Grogu. We love Boba Fett's a good guy now. No, he's not a good guy or a bad guy. Boba Fett is doing what is in the best interests of Boba Fett. And most anti-heroes live in that world of what works for me right now. That's why Harley Quinn's a great anti-hero. Well, that's why the Punisher is a great anti-hero. You know, these guys will do whatever it takes to get the job done to meet their own needs. And Star Wars really doesn't have that character. Maybe they do now. Maybe Boba Fett is that character that is the, man, we're rooting for him, but sometimes he does stuff that's just terrible. And that's exciting to me, that that could be the role that Boba Fett could be taking. And I think it's the role that they should have him take. The Book of Boba Fett should be Boba Fett doing what's best for Boba Fett. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. At the end of the day, doesn't matter to him. So really looking forward to The Book of Boba Fett. But on to the season 2 finale of The Mandalorian, the rescue. So they go to the Imperial cruiser with Moff Gideon, and it is like edge of your seat the whole time as they're boarding the boarding plan. The whole time I was expecting somebody to die. I'm not going to lie. Every time a character turned a corner, was in a battle, I thought, this is it. This is when they're going to die. This is when the whole plan's going to fall apart. I was even worried for a bit that they were going to kill Grogu. And I've been on record saying there's too much merchandising in killing him. There's no way you kill him. You know, but I was that concerned. There's a fantastic battle between Moff Gideon and the Mandalorian. Moff Gideon wielding the Darksaber. Mandalorian has the Beskar spear. And the Darksaber can cut through anything except Beskar, so it allows them to have a fantastic, battle back and forth. Bo-Katana and her crew, they take the bridge, and eventually Mandalorian beats Moff Gideon, brings him back to the bridge. They think all's well and done, but the Dark Troopers are around. Mandalorian had jettisoned them to space, so he thought they were gone, but they're fucking robots. They can live in space. So they fly back to the ship, you know, like jetpack feet, right? Back to the ship. And now they have to deal with these Dark Troopers coming. And there's this fantastic smirk on Moff Gideon's face of like, you're all going to die. You know, it's like the Mandalorian took out one Dark Trooper, but it damn near killed him. So, you know, and Moff Gideon points at it. He goes, you beat one, but it took a lot out of you. You know, now you have to defeat, an army of them. Good luck. And so the whole time, these Dark Troopers are banging on the door and working their way through the blast door. And it's just kind of this pummeling of this inevitable future. Like, the heroes are there. Their guns are up. They're ready to go. They're going to give it a stand. But you kind of feel like, this is not going to go well. And Grogu goes over and looks at a monitor, and they cut to the monitor, and you see an X-Wing fly into the loading bay. And you're like, oh, fuck, okay, an X-Wing. Well, all right, he probably reached out to a Jedi. I know a Jedi that flies an X-Wing, but they're not doing that. And then this Jedi gets off his X-Wing, and he fires up his lightsaber, and it's green. And I'm like, you know, there was a Jedi, a pretty badass Jedi that had a green lightsaber, but, you know, I'm sure other guys had great, they're not doing that. Then they cut to a scene of the Jedi standing there, and you see one hand, but it's black and gloved and black. And I'm like, yeah, there was a Jedi that had a black glove and a green lightsaber. I looked at my wife and I went, when I first saw the green lightsaber, I said it. But when I saw the black glove, I went, it's fucking Luke. They're bringing Luke Skywalker into the Mandalorian. He is coming to save them. This is insane. Like, this is something there were always reports online. Everybody, we talked about it here. What Jedis were alive when, you know, in this time period, like, who could Grogu have reached out to? And obviously Luke was out there, but it was like, listen, they're not going to get Luke. It's just, you know, Mark Hamill's older. It's just, they're not going to do Luke. Everybody that said that, myself included, we were all fucking wrong. It was Luke. And I was welled with emotion. Like, I was so, it's like an old lost friend coming back to just save the day. And he mows through these Dark Troopers. And I said instantly, I was like, that's his Vader Rogue One moment. If you remember the end of Rogue One, Darth Vader, the end of Rogue One turns into a horror movie. You got all these, you know, rebels trying to get the Death Star plans, and they're in a dark corridor. Just that red Sith saber fires up. You hear Vader breathing, and he's just mowing through them, right? Using force powers to choke them, throw them. He's lightsabering the hell out of them. It is menacing. It, in like 2 minutes, shows you just how badass Darth Vader is and why the galaxy feared him like no one else. And this was Luke's Darth Vader Rogue One moment, because it showed just how powerful Luke had become with the Force, and scary in the way of like, man, if that guy wasn't on our side, we're fucked, because he mows through these dark troopers in much the same way that Vader did. Force powers, lightsaber, like, just, it's systematic and it's amazing. And the whole time I'm sitting there like a 5-year-old that just had the best ice cream cone in the world. I've got the giantest smile on my face. I've never been that happy watching anything, I don't think. It was just so amazing. And then they show his face, and they had a body double, and they definitely used some CGI. It was better than Leia in Rogue One. Still a little stiff, but much better. But Mark Hamill did the voice, and it came out later that he was actually on set, which is really cool. And, you know, he said, I don't know how we kept that a secret for over a year, but kudos to everybody involved with The Mandalorian for keeping that a secret. Because if that had been ruined, my God, it still would have been amazing, but it would not have had the same impact if I had known that that was Luke on that X-Wing. Easily the season 2 finale of The Mandalorian very well may be the best 45 minutes of anything Star Wars ever. It is just phenomenal. And, you know, I was talking to somebody that's not a huge Star Wars fan, and they were like, well, I should watch that. That sounds cool. If you don't watch The Mandalorian story from the first episode up to the season 2 finale, it's just not going to have the same impact. You're going to think it's cool, but it's not going to have the same kind of emotional impact that it has. It was everything Star Wars needs to be kind of going forward, and nothing short of brilliant. Everybody involved with The Mandalorian deserves a pay raise, a pat on the back, a statue somewhere. Support, like, it's just so well done. Now, having said all that beautiful stuff, there's nothing wrong with it. Believe me, there's nothing negative. I just still have questions. Like, I still want to know who got Grogu out of the Jedi Temple when Anakin went all nuts and killed all the younglings, because he was there. I still need to know that. And then now, because I'm so attached to Grogu, I need to know, like, was he... I think it's enough of a time frame that he probably wasn't with Luke when Ben Solo went nuts at the Jedi Academy and killed a bunch of people. Because I can't have Grogu dying, is what I'm saying. So, you know, it's kind of one of these, I mean, he has to somewhere along the line. But I have a couple of questions, mostly out of concern for Grogu. That's really where it sits. But amazing stuff from The Mandalorian. Can't wait till season 3 comes. Can't wait for the Book of Boba Fett. I see people online. I saw some people complain, going, I don't know how to feel about this. It's fan service. Just because they bring back a character we love doesn't mean it's fan service. It fits the story. And even if it is fan service, it was great fan service. It was the best fan service ever. When you go to a restaurant and you get great service, do you bitch about it? Or do you go, that was great? You say that was great. And that's all you can say about The Mandalorian. Anybody that's like, meh, I got to question you. I do. Unless you're not into Star Wars. It's about the only way I can accept it. But that, like I say, that's it. I've watched that Luke thing a few times. I'm just saying. So that will wrap it up for this week's edition of the show and the 2020 year of the Scotty Marr Show. Thank you so much for listening and downloading and streaming wherever you're doing it, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, ScottyMarrsMedia.com, whatever you're using to listen to us. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Don't forget, tell your friends, spread the word. We really had some nice spikes in listenership, so, and I attribute that to you guys sharing the spreading the word. So thank you so much. Don't forget, reach out to me anytime on social media, the Scotty Marr Show on Instagram and Facebook, at Scotty Marrs on Twitter, or you can shoot me an email at scottymarrsmedia.com. There's a link there to contact me. So until we chat again in 2021, have a great week.